With daylight, Johnny awoke and looked up into a leaden sky. The smell of rain was fresh in the air. It would be coming down hard before long. He would bet on that.
Spec, we just as well get started.
Spec Quitman stirred and rubbed his eyes. He blinked and looked around sleepily, trying to get his bearings. He looked at the dark sky overhead, then glanced north.
Oh, bad enough to be hungry, but to be soaked and cold on top of an empty belly is almost too much to stand.
We got slickers. At least those didn't come loose from the saddles.
I know it was my fault, but that don't make it any easier. I'm starving to death.
Johnny found himself looking wishfully in the direction where he had spotted the campfire last night. He couldn't find it now in the daylight.
I think we ought to go over yonder and see who them folks are. Maybe it's some ranch chuck wagon.
You know the risk.
And I know I'm so hungry I can't see straight.
All right, let's go.
They saddled up and rode out following the river. It took a while. There'd been no way of telling in the darkness how far away the fire had been, or on which side of the river it lay. It could have been a quarter mile, or it could have been three times that much. Johnny didn't indulge himself in curiosity. Like Speck, the main thing which bothered him right now was that he was hungry. He looked often at the sky. The rain smell was stronger. It was a bracing smell, one welcomed by a native West Texan under almost any circumstance, for rain came too seldom. They saw the tent first, then the old Studebaker wagon, standing there with a half-worn-out wagon sheet tied loosely over the bows to cover whatever goods there were in the wagon bed. Two horses were staked out on grass nearby. A campfire had burned itself down low, a coffee pot sitting on shoveled-out coals next to it. Johnny saw several pots and one big Dutch oven, but they looked empty. He wondered if the folks had already eaten and thrown out what was left.
Hello? Anybody home?
He saw a flash of skirt at the open tent flap. A girl stepped outside and looked worriedly around. Her gaze fell upon the approaching riders. She lifted her skirts a little and came running. She was young, Johnny saw, maybe 17, 18, and she was crying.
Thank God you've come! Please hurry!
Speck was staring at the girl in total surprise. Johnny swung down. The girl caught his arm and began to pull him toward the camp.
Please, I've got to have help.
Johnny dragged his feet a little, watching the tent with a considerable degree of suspicion.
Miss, I don't know what your trouble is, but we got trouble too.
My father's in there. He's dying.
Come on, Speck. We better see what we can do.
Johnny, I don't like the smell of this.
Come on.
Johnny wrapped his reins around a wagon wheel and followed the girl to the tent. He paused at the tent flap and looked inside. A man lay on a bedroll spread out on the ground. The hollow-cheeked face was wasted and pale. His beard was the only thing about him that wasn't a liver gray. Reddish foam showed on his lips.
Tuberculosis.
This man was a consumptive. Johnny knew the girl had judged right. The man had waited too long. The girl dropped to her knees and touched a wet handkerchief to her father's lips. Johnny stared, a strange knot drawing up inside him.
Is he conscious?
Off and on. Right now, he knows I'm here. That's about all. He's going. I can feel it. He's going.
She bit her lip and touched the handkerchief to her father's face again. Johnny made himself move a little closer, though a cold chill ran through him. He dreaded this slow, wasting disease, and he'd always avoided people who had it.
You've known, haven't you, that he didn't have much time left? You can tell it by looking at him.
Yes, but they told us this dry air might do it. We hoped so much, and we came so far, all the way from Illinois.
You got no other folks here? Nobody to help you?
Papa's all I've got left. When he goes, there'll be nobody. Oh, please, he's in pain. Don't you know anything to do for him?
I've never had any experience with this. Don't reckon there's much anybody can do but wait. Maybe pray a little bit.
Raindrops began spattering against the canvas. Speck Quitman stepped up to the flap and looked inside suspiciously. His eyes widened. Wordlessly, he motioned for Johnny to come outside.
Johnny, don't you know what the matter is with that man in there? I can tell from here he's a lunger. He got the lung fever. You better keep out of that tent.
The girl needs help. He's dying.
He'll take you with him if you catch that lung fever. Let's get the hell out of here.
Speck, she needs help.
What can you do? Can you stop him from dying?
No, but somebody ought to be here. She'll be alone.
She's no concern of ours. She was alone before we come here. We could as easy have rode on by, and she'd have been no worse off than she ever was.
I can't do it, Speck. She got too much trouble for a girl like her to handle alone.
We got trouble, too.
Mister! Oh, mister!
Johnny turned and left Speck standing there.
Oh, it's all right, Papa. We've got some help. It's all right, Papa.
The man's eyes opened a little. He blinked, trying to focus. He looked a moment at the girl, then weakly turned his head to look at Johnny. Who are you?
Name's John Fristo, sir.
You help my daughter. Help her.
I'll help her.
Please don't leave her.
No, sir, I won't leave her.
The dying man lapsed back into the shadows. Johnny eased to the tent flap and looked outside. He saw that Speck had unsaddled their horses and shoved the saddles into the wagon. Speck squatted beneath the vehicle, his yellow slicker wrapped around him, vainly trying to keep dry. There was enough wind with the rain that the water drove in under the wagon.
Speck, you come in here before you get yourself soaked.
No! I'd rather take my chances with the rain. If you had any smart, you'd be out here too.
At least get into the wagon before you get soaked any worse.
He turned back to the girl and wished again he could do something besides just stand here and watch. When you come right down to it, there wasn't much anybody could have done now. Not even a doctor. Just wait. So he waited. And at last, death came quietly into the tent, touched the girl's father, and peacefully took him away. It was hard to tell just when sleep lapsed over into death.
Papa.
Johnny put his hands on her shoulders. He thought he probably should say something, but nothing came to mind, so he let it go. All he could give her was sympathy, and he couldn't put even that into words. The rain stopped. Johnny walked out of the tent and raised his head. For a moment, the sun broke through and it struck the spot along the river where the camp stood. He looked up through the small break, and the sun struck him full in the eyes. A chill passed through him. He had always taken his Bible teachings literally, and he wondered if there was some special meaning in the way the light touched here, where a man had just died. Back in the tent, he found the girl was no longer crying. She still knelt, solemnly looking down at her father.
I expect you'll be wanting to take him back to Angelo.
We didn't know anybody in San Angelo. We just came there on the train, and we bought this old wagon and team at a stable. We came on out because Papa thought camping on the ground would cure him.
Seems like you came an awful long way.
We stopped once, closer in, but the man who owned the land didn't want us there. He made us move. We came here and nobody has bothered us. Besides, I don't have money left to bury him with. It took about all we had to get him here.
You gotta do something about him.
I know. He liked this spot. It seemed to strike his fancy the minute he saw it. I think he would have liked to be buried here. Will you help me?
We'll help you. Might set into raining again directly. Expect if we're going to dig, we better get at it.
He went out and looked around for a pick and shovel. He found Speck standing by the wagon, his clothes wet.
Speck, I swear you look a sight. You ought to have come inside like I told you.
You about ready to leave here, Dal?
Speck, her father died. We're gonna bury him before we go.
Johnny, we gotta be a-riding. Harrod is liable to be almost any place.
We can't just leave this girl here with a dead body on her hands. We gotta help her.
All right. Sooner we get it done, the sooner we get moving. I'll dig, but I ain't gonna handle him done, you understand?
You oughtn't to be in those wet clothes. Maybe the girl can lend you some of her dad's.
No, sir. Thank you. I wouldn't touch it.
He took the shovel from Johnny's hand. They let the girl pick the spot back away from the river where no flood would disturb the grave. That was the first time Johnny mentioned to her that they were hungry. She nodded solemnly.
I'm sorry. I should have asked you a long time ago.
You had a plenty to worry about.
I should have asked you anyway. I'll go fix something.
Speck started the digging. Johnny walked down to the camp with the girl. In the wagon bed, he found a small supply of dry wood. She had been farsighted enough to put it under there before the rain started. In a wooden box, there was some canned goods, flour, coffee, and sundry camp supplies. He put some of the dry wood into the fire pit, poured a little kerosene over it, and set it ablaze. He could see the girl through the open tent flap. She was pulling the blanket up over her father's face. Johnny turned away, respecting her privacy. She came out a short time later.
Need any more help right now?
I'll be all right.
Best go help my partner.
He's wet. I could get some of Papa's dry clothes for him.
He wouldn't wear them. He takes some funny notions sometimes. But I'll tell him you made the offer, and thanks.
He had been looking around camp for something that would do as a headboard. All he could find was the end gate from the wagon. He took it out.
Funny. I don't even know what name to put on this.
His name was Edward Barnett.
Never did hear yours either.
Mine is Tessie. Tessie Barnett. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want.
With a rope, Johnny and Speck lowered Edward Barnett into the grave. They stood and looked at the ground while the girl started reading the 23rd Psalm in a weak, strained voice.
Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me.
Johnny took the Bible from her hands. He finished reading what she had started.
Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
He closed the book and handed it to her, and added the one thing he could remember from funerals he had attended.
The Lord giveth, and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
She glanced up at him, and their eyes held a moment. Something stirred Johnny, something he had never felt before.
Thank you.
Tessie turned and walked back down to the camp. Speck and Johnny filled the grave and put the headboard in place, bracing it with rocks to make sure it didn't fall down.
Reckon anybody will ever notice it up here? It's a ways off the trail.
I don't know. Maybe they won't. But it don't seem right to put a man away and not even leave a headboard to mark his passing. Man ought to have at least that to show that he once walked this earth, else he'd just as well never been here.
It don't look like he's left much to show for him. An old wagon, a tent, ain't much to make a man's whole life look worthwhile.
Down the slope, the girl was breaking camp.
Maybe it's not the money and the property a man leaves is really important, Speck. They get scattered, and who's ever gonna remember him by that? But he left that girl. She'll remember him as long as she lives. She'll have children someday, and she'll tell them about him. They'll remember. Come right down to it, Speck. I don't guess a marker is really so important after all.
They folded the tent and placed it in the wagon. Speck went out and got the team. Johnny looked worriedly at the girl.
Miss, what are you gonna do now?
I don't know. I hadn't let myself think about it. I just know I can't stay here where he died.
You can sell the wagon and team, I suppose, and go back to where you came from.
I've got no family there anymore. There's nothing to go back to.
And maybe San Angelo. It's a good-sized town. Expect a girl like you could get decent work there.
I have to live somewhere. How far is it to San Angelo?
Fair piece. 40 miles, I expect. Think you could make it there by yourself?
I guess I could. Do you suppose I could get you fellows to go with me? I've never been by myself like this. I guess I'm scared.
Johnny saw alarm surge into Speck's face, and he moved to head Speck off.
Miss Barnett, we're going west. We can't go to San Angelo.
I don't have much money left, but I'll give you what I do have.
It ain't the money. I mean, if we could do it at all, we'd do it for nothing. But you see, well, the truth is we can't go back. They're looking for us there.
I can't believe that. You've been kind to me, both of you. You couldn't have done anything bad.
We did a bad thing, but not on purpose. It was an accident.
We'll hitch up your horses, miss. Too bad we can't do more.
It didn't take Johnny long to figure out that Speck was simply glad to be shed of her and get moving again. They turned the wagon around for her and headed it eastward towards San Angelo.
Thank you again, both of you. I'll never forget this.
I wish you would. I mean, if anybody asks you.
I won't say a thing.
They watched her top out over the hill, a tiny looking thing, and all alone.
Johnny, you reckon she'll ever make it there all by herself?
I don't know. I purely don't know.
It's a long ways.
Johnny kept watching the girl, and that strange feeling came over him again. Suddenly, he touched spurs to his horse.
Come on, Speck. We're not going to let her do it.
What can we do? We can't go with her.
We can take her west with us a ways. There's bound to be a ranch up there someplace where we can leave her with folks who'll see she gets to town all right.
Johnny, I do believe you're losing your head over that girl.
I just never could sleep wondering if she ever got there all right or if something happened to her. Come on, Speck.
Milam Haggard was tired, but he had cultivated a rigid self-discipline that would not allow him to show it. Riding a black-legged dun, leading a brown horse with a small pack, he kept his back straight, his shoulders high. His flat-brimmed black hat with a round crown was pulled down low over his eyes, so that he held his chin high to be able to see out under the brim. It gave him the appearance of a man with strong pride, and the appearance was not misleading. But it was not pride which dominated him now. He burned with a grim and silent determination. He had passed the North Concho village of Water Valley a while ago, and ahead of him lay the Baker Fristo place. He had made some inquiry around San Angelo about this Fristo. Most people had told him Fristo was a hard-working small cowman who had pulled himself up by his own bootstraps and never made trouble for anybody. But Haggard knew circumstances could forge drastic changes in a person. The mildest of men would stand up and fight for a son. He was sure the situation here would be different from the one he had stepped into in San Angelo when he visited Speck Quitman's aunt. She had broken into uncontrollable hysterics and cried about the shame that had been brought upon her. It had seemed to Haggard that she showed little concern for her nephew, but a great deal about the disgrace that had befallen her good family name. Haggard had held her in contempt, but he had stayed until he found out that the two cowboys were likely to visit Baker Fristo. Fristo probably wouldn't tell them anything on purpose, Haggard knew, but long ago he had learned that people would usually tell more than they realized, more than they intended. A word, a glance, a set of tracks, and he might discover all he really needed to know. Haggard rode out of the brushy draw and saw before him the big windmill, the rambling set of corrals, the barn, the fading frame house. He reined up for a long, careful look around. He studied closely the places where a man or men could hide. His gaze caught movement out in one of the corrals. Two men were hanging a new wooden gate. Haggard lightly touched the reins and moved the dun in that direction, the pack horse following.
Howdy. Get down and rest yourself.
Haggard did not do so immediately. He sat still, his gaze sweeping the corrals and the barn.
You can quit looking. Ain't nobody here but us. Just me and Lalo. Nobody else.
Haggard glanced at the Mexican and saw apprehension in the dark eyes. For a little of nothing, the man would turn and run like a deer.
I ain't lying to you, Mr. Haggard. You know me. Never met you, but I know who you are. I know where you've come. My boy's not here. Even if he was, he wouldn't shoot you in the back. He ain't that sort.
Haggard stared at Fristo and then looked around for a sign of a gun somewhere.
No guns. Me and Lalo, we're just working on the corrals a little. We didn't figure on shooting anybody.
If you know why I've come here, you might be inclined to shoot me.
I'd rather just talk to you, Mr. Haggard.
Talk won't change anything. You ought to know that.
I always heard you were a reasonable man, Mr. Haggard. I think the truth would change things if you just listened to it. Well, no use us standing out here in the hot sun. It's dinner time directly, and I'd just as well go fix us something to eat. You'll stay and eat with us, won't you, Mr. Haggard?
You're asking me to eat with you?
It's dinner time. Nobody ever left my place hungry.
I've come here looking for your boy, and you know why.
I know. I aim to try and talk you out of it.
It won't work.
I'll try anyway. You gotta stop and eat sometime. You just as well do it here.
Haggard stepped to the ground, frowning, studying this bent man. Then he followed him up onto the porch. Fristo nodded toward a washstand on which were a bucket of water, a dipper, and a washpan.
I expect you're pretty hot and dusty, Mr. Haggard. Probably make you feel better to wash yourself.
As the guest, Haggard washed first, then Fristo. In the house, Fristo motioned toward a rocking chair.
Set yourself a spell while I see what I can fix.
It did not escape Haggard's notice that when the leftover morning coffee was again hot, Baker Fristo passed up the nicer cups and purposely took out one of the plain kind for his own use. He was evidently more comfortable with those.
I afraid my cooking ain't much for fancy, but it fills in between the ribs. It's on.
Haggard moved to the table. He'd never really been hungry. He had never been one to eat much. Since his wife's death, eating had been a necessity that he forced upon himself. The Mexican came in and sat at the table with them. Haggard noticed this. He had been at many places where it wouldn't have been done. Haggard ate slowly, forcing the food down because he knew he needed it. Fristo ate in silence, but Haggard could feel the man's eyes appraising him. Haggard found himself liking the man. It would have been easier if he hadn't.
It's a hard and bitter thing for a man to lose his wife. I know, because I've been there.
Then you'll understand how I feel and why I do what I do.
Those boys had no thought of hurting your wife. If it had even occurred to them that a thing like that could happen, they wouldn't have stopped the heck. But they figured they'd been done wrong. Just the way you feel you've been wronged. They made a mistake, like you're fixing to. They'll regret it as long as they live. And so will you, Mr. Haggard, if you go through with this.
They killed her. All the talk in the world won't change that.
It was an accident. The blame isn't all theirs. It wasn't even them that fired the gun. It was that feller named Larimore.
They told you that, Fristo. You can't really know.
My boy told me. And he's never lied.
He never killed anybody before, either.
They're just boys, Haggard.
They're men. They're both of age. And that makes them men in the sight of the law.
Now where is the law, Haggard? How come it's not with you, helping you hunt 'em?
The law looked at it the way you do. The sheriff down there, he said it was an accident. He wouldn't file a murder charge. But she's dead. Nothing anybody says can bring her back.
And kill my son? Will that bring her back?
He killed her. He and that other one. An eye for an eye is what the Bible says. It's God's vengeance.
God also has his mercy.
I'll be riding on. I'm sorry I stopped here.
Please, Haggard, listen to me. Think!
I've been thinking. That's all I've done for days. I've hardly even slept for the thinking I've done. And it always comes back to the same thing. They killed my wife. I'm gonna get them, Fristo. And the only thing I'll be sorry for is that it's your son.
He turned and started for the front door. He heard Baker Fristo move quickly. Instinctively, Haggard stopped. Even as he turned back, his hand darted downward, coming up with the pistol from his hip. Baker Fristo had lifted a rifle from a set of hooks on the wall and was starting to turn with it.
Stop! Stop it right there!
Fristo hesitated a second, then kept on turning, the rifle still in his hands.
Stop, Fristo! You haven't got a chance. For God's sake, man, I don't want to kill you.
Fristo froze, but he still held the rifle. Eyes desperate, he looked into the bore of Haggard's pistol. The color began leaving his face. The man was scared. But Haggard could tell he was also determined, and that made him dangerous.
You'll kill me, but I'll kill you too, Haggard.
Not a chance. It's not worth the try.
My son's life is worth any chance.
You haven't got any chance. I put a bullet through your heart and you couldn't pull that trigger. But I don't want to do it. Believe me, I don't want to do it. Put it down now, Fristo. For God's sake, put it down.
He could see the realization of helplessness slowly come into Fristo's eyes. And with the helplessness, a glistening of tears. Fristo laid the rifle on the floor and stood up, his shoulders slumped, his face stamped with defeat. He looked like an old man.
I tried. I tried.
You got a lot of guts, Mr. Fristo. If it's any consolation to you, you can always tell yourself you did what you could. But you never had a chance, not from the first.
It's not important that I tried. What matters is that I failed. And now you go out and kill my son.
Haggard swallowed. He saw the Mexican come up beside Fristo, the fear somehow gone from him. He saw the intention written all across the little man's dark face.
Don't try it, hombre. You just leave that gun lay there, or I'll have to kill you.
Lalo slowly backed away. Haggard picked up the rifle. He unloaded it, carefully watching the two men. He started to lay the rifle across a chair, then changed his mind.
I'll take this with me out to the barn and leave it there. I'd be real glad if y'all would just stay here till I get out of sight.
You can't find him, Haggard. It's 2,000 miles from here to the Canada border. They could be any place.
You mean they went north?
Fristo nodded, and Haggard felt somehow a little sorry for him. It was a transparent effort, born of unreasoning desperation. Had the pair really gone north, not even Indian torture would have made Fristo admit it. Haggard knew within reason they wouldn't go south again. That was where they'd come from. Nobody here ever ran east, back into the settled country where it would be easy to locate them. Only one way was left, west. Anybody going west from here would almost surely strike for the Middle Concho, Centralia Draw, and ultimately Horsehead Crossing on the Pecos. That narrowed it and made it easier for him.
Mr. Fristo, I'm sorry for you.
It was night now, and the storm was coming back. Johnny and Speck sat beside the wagon, watching jagged fingers of lightning shatter the black sky to the south. Short flashes illuminated the underside of ugly clouds that likely were carrying hail. Speck's cold was settling deeper in his chest.
Sure fixing to rain again directly. I reckon we best sleep in the wagon bed under the sheet.
The campfire had burned down low, but in its dim glow, Johnny could see the girl seated in front of her tent, staring sadly into the coals.
Johnny, that girl's slowing us down something awful.
Can't just ride off and leave her.
There's some as would.
We're bound to find a ranch house someplace tomorrow.
Kinda got you going, ain't she?
Worried about her is all. Things could happen to a girl out here like this.
Get all wrapped up in a girl and you'll forget your old partner. That's what you'll do. If she was some middle-aged old maid, reckon you'd be as worried about her?
Johnny was afraid he knew the answer, but it didn't make him particularly proud. He pushed to his feet and walked down to the tent. The girl didn't seem to notice him at first. Her gaze was fixed on the glowing coals.
Anything we can do for you, Miss Barnett?
No. Thank you. I'm afraid the only thing that will help me now is time. Lots of time.
You just hurt yourself brooding this away.
Not easy to put a thing like this out of your mind, though, especially as fresh as it is. I'm not sure I want to, not for a while yet. I'm sorry to be a burden to you.
You're no burden.
I'm keeping you here.
We'll be all right.
Will you? What about the man you said is after you?
Rain this morning washed down all the tracks we made up to the time we struck a camp. Rain again tonight will wash out what we made today. I expect he'll be hard put to follow us.
The girl stared into the dying campfire. The smell of burning mesquite blended well with the clean smell of oncoming rain.
My father always liked the rain. Said it seemed to wash the world down and give it a fresh start. Said it needed a clean start as often as it could get one.
I wish I could get a clean start.
Can't you?
Take a lot more than rain to wash away what happened.
Do you have any folks, Johnny?
My dad is all, and I've said goodbye to him. The way things are, I doubt I'll ever get to see him again.
Then you must feel a little like I do. It almost makes you panic to realize all of a sudden that you're alone. deep down, you know the pain will pass someday, but that doesn't help much right now.
I'll tell you something my dad said when my mother died. It helped me. He said to look forward. Try and put yourself into the future. He said, imagine it's been a long time, that whatever has hurt you is in the past and the healing already done. He said, you know that someday it'll be like that. So try to pretend now that someday has already come.
Does it work?
It helps. It's a way to borrow strength and ease the pain. Eventually you find out that someday has come. It's over and you've lived. I've used it to write smart the last couple days. Lord knows a man needs anything he can find that'll help, even a little.
Your dad must be a good man.
The best there is.
And he raised a son just like him.
They were traveling again by shortly after daylight, the wagon wheels cutting deep into the mud of last night's rain. Turning in the saddle, Johnny worriedly studied the bold tracks they were leaving. A blind mule could follow them. Moreover, when the ruts dried, they would set, a little like concrete. They'd be a long time eroding away. Of course, Haggard probably wouldn't know the cowboys were traveling with a wagon, but their own horses were leaving tracks, too. By this time, Haggard, no doubt, had studied the tracks until he could pick these two horses out of a remuda by them. For a little while, Johnny and Speck tried riding ahead of the wagon, hoping the girls' team would wipe out their tracks. It didn't work very well, and they quit trying. Johnny doubted an expert tracker like the manhunter Haggard would be fooled for very long. Nothing to do then but try to find a ranch where they could leave the girl, then pick up speed as they rode on west. Out there, it never rained much. The constant wind would worry away a set of tracks in soft earth until they were gone within hours. They traveled all morning along the trace started by the Butterfield stages and followed since by thousands of wagons over the long frontier years. With the warmth of the bright morning sun, the moisture from the rain began to evaporate. The steam of it set Johnny to sweating. For Speck, it was even worse. His face was flushed. He wouldn't let Johnny touch him, but Johnny knew his partner was beginning to run a fever of sorts. Speck's eyes were red and his temper short. Times like this, Johnny had found it best simply to leave him alone. They stopped to eat a little and rest the horses. Speck was in misery, both of body and of soul. Sweat soaked his cotton shirt as he sat in the thin shade of a big mesquite. His eyes were riveted to the back trail. It was easy to read his mind. He ate little.
Johnny, I'm afraid I caught the lung fever.
Where'd you get a notion like that? It takes a long time to develop the lung fever. You took yourself a cold out in the rain, that's all.
You reckon that's it?
Sure, you'll be all right. But you need to rest a while, as soon as we find a ranch house.
We done rested too much now. Old Haggard is liable to come riding along most any minute now.
Not yet. He hasn't had time.
He don't need time. He'll smell us out like a bloodhound. We need to keep him moving.
Even horses have to rest. Here, Speck, eat a little more.
You're wrong, Johnny. It is a lung fever. I caught it off that girl's daddy, as sure as sin.
Let's go, Speck.
About the middle of the afternoon, they saw a trace leading off to the northwest, a faint wagon trail that had been used only enough to show it belonged to somebody. Johnny glanced back at the lagging Speck hunched in the saddle. He pulled out into the faintly marked trail and motioned for Tessie Barnett to bring her wagon along. Speck drew over to the side of the trail, his head down. He had nothing to say. Johnny edged his horse back beside the wagon.
Tessie? Miss Barnett? Here's a trail. Chances are it leads to a ranch yonder way someplace. Not a big outfit from the looks of the trail, but a ranch anyway.
Think it'll be far, Johnny?
No way of telling. We'll know when we come to it.
Tessie glanced at Speck.
He's pretty sick. He'd be better off in the wagon.
I expect he would. Speck, why don't you sit up here with Miss Barnett? I'll tie your horse on behind.
Speck didn't argue. Johnny gave him a boost up, but he could tell Speck needed it.
Speck, when we find a ranch house, you're gonna have to rest a spell. No buts about it.
Let's just be getting on.
They rode an hour, following the dim trail over rocky hills and through dry-looking scrub cedar timber. It hadn't rained so much here. Down yonder from the trail ran a small creek that would empty into the Middle Concho somewhere to the south. Finally, as Johnny was beginning to wonder if the trail really led anywhere, they came upon a ranch headquarters. It sat at the foot of a hill with chinaberry trees rimming what appeared to be a small seep or spring. For a moment, Johnny's spirit sagged. He had hoped for more. This was just a little box house, a one-room affair likely, or two rooms at the most. A small rock shed served a saddle house and barn. A couple of weathered brush arbors out by the shed had been intended originally to shade the livestock, but they hadn't been kept up, and much of the brush topping had fallen to the ground, leaving big openings for the sun to shine through. Another brush arbor stood in front of the unpainted frame house. Beneath it, a lone man sat in an old rocking chair. The thought came to Johnny that this was no time of day for a man to be lazing around the house. He ought to be out tending to his work. At least, that was the way his dad had taught him. But he knew that not all people looked at life that way. From the rundown appearance of the place, Johnny would bet this man spent far more time under the shady arbor than at work out in the sun. The man stopped rocking and sat motionless, watching their approach. Nearing, Johnny saw this was a man of 40 or so, running strongly to paunch. His hair was starting to gray in spots, and he hadn't shaved in a week or two. His clothes would have stood alone if he'd taken them off, which he probably hadn't done in days. He gave no sign that he was glad to see company.
Y'all lost or something?
As he stood up, his gaze quickly shifted to the girl.
You got some drinking water?
Yeah, back there in the cistern.
Been looking a long time for a ranch house. This girl needs help to get back to San Angelo.
You look to me like a healthy feller. I doubt there's anything she needs that you couldn't give her.
He stepped out from under the arbor and squinted in the sun, looking closer at the girl.
Been a long time since there's any woman up at this place. If I'd known you was coming, I'd have shaved, fixed up a little.
His gaze fell upon Speck.
You look like you fell off a wagon and got run over. What's the matter with you?
He's sick. Got wet and took a bad cold. I was hoping he could rest here a little.
Yeah. Sick folks take a lot of caring for. I don't have much time.
You won't have to do anything. We'll do it.
I got my little room here, as you can see. I reckon you could roll them out a blanket under the arbor, though. Don't see how that could hurt nothing.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
You said something about the girl needing somebody to help her get back to Angelo.
I was sort of hoping there'd be somebody here who could take her.
Ain't nobody here but me.
Any neighbors?
No, not for a long ways. I never did care much for neighbors anyhow. Always come a-borrowing or wanting help. And then they're always accusing you of this, that, and the other. Now, how come you don't take her to Angelo yourself?
When Johnny didn't answer, realization came into the man's muddy eyes.
Oh, you boys are on the dodge, that's what it is. I can tell.
The man looked at Speck.
Maybe he didn't catch cold at all. Maybe he's wounded.
He's not wounded. I told you the truth.
Who'd you fellas rob? A bank? The Santa Fe Railroad?
We never robbed anybody.
No, then you killed somebody. That's what you done. You killed somebody.
They didn't kill anybody. They were there, but that was all. They weren't the ones who did it.
Hush, Tessie.
Oh, how'd you fit into this, girl? You look a mite green to be running with this wild bunch.
We told you the truth. We found her along the trail. Her daddy was sick. He died and we buried him. Now we're just looking for somebody to take her to Angelo. We couldn't go off and leave her there.
No, I don't want to get in touch with the law. I can't go harboring no fugitives. You boys can water your horses and get drink for yourselves, and then you got to get off my place. The girl, if she wants to, she can stay here. I'll see she gets to Angelo.
Mister, my partner's sick.
No, he'll be dead if the law finds him here. I don't want him on my place.
Angrily, Johnny tried to stare him down, but the man simply ignored him and turned back to the girl.
Honey, if you want to get down from that wagon...
I don't know.
I don't like the looks of it here.
But, Johnny, you've lost a lot of time on my account already. Maybe you'd be better trying to make some of it up.
Speck being like he is, we can't move very fast anyway.
But you wouldn't have me on your hands.
I don't like the looks of this feller.
Neither do I. But if he'll take me to San Angelo, that's the main thing. I'll be all right. Don't worry about me.
I don't like it. Don't like it at all.
What choice do you have? You'd better go, Johnny. I think if he could get his hands on a gun, he might try to hold you.
Been thinking the same thing myself. Tessie, I like you. I wish we could have met some other way.
So do I, Johnny. And maybe someday...
There won't be any someday. We're not coming back, me and Speck. We can't.
She leaned over. To his surprise, she kissed him on the cheek. He felt his face warm again.
Then goodbye, Johnny. I won't forget you.
Confused, he pulled away abruptly. He reined up beside the paunchy man.
I never did get your name.
Gerson. Gerson's my name. What's yours?
You better be sure to take good care of this girl, Gerson. Come on, Speck. We gotta be moving.
Riding away, Johnny paused several times to look back. The first time, the girl still sat in the wagon watching them. The next time, she was standing in the shade of the arbor, but she was still watching. The third time, just before they rode out of sight, Johnny saw the man standing beside her. Johnny turned in the saddle, doubt tugging at him. He and Speck rode half an hour in silence. Speck was slumped forward, fever riding him. Johnny reined up suddenly.
Speck, we oughtn't to have left her there. We don't know that Gerson. Did you notice how he looked at her?
Like a coyote looking at a cottontail rabbit.
I'm going back for her, Speck.
Speck only shrugged. Johnny looked about for some shade, though the day was wearing well along toward sundown and it was no longer particularly hot. He rode to a big mesquite, took his blanket, and spread it out beneath the tree.
Lie down there and rest, Speck. I'll be back directly with Tessie in the wagon.
Speck didn't argue. He almost fell out of the saddle. Johnny hurried to help him. When he had Speck set, he swung back onto the brown horse.
Come on, traveler.
He saw the wagon beside the brush arbor and the team standing droop-headed, not yet unhitched. The man and the girl must be in the house. Johnny wrapped the reins around a post and stepped up to the open door.
Now, girl, you got nothing to be afraid of.
Gerson hadn't heard Johnny. The man had Tessie backed into a corner, his big left arm braced against the wall to keep her from stepping aside. His right hand was under her chin, and her eyes were wide with fear.
Get away from her, Gerson!
Johnny!
Startled, Gerson turned. Instantly, the girl darted beyond his reach. She ran across the small room and threw herself against Johnny.
Oh, Johnny, you came back!
What have you done to her?
I ain't done nothing.
He told me he was going to the law and tell them about you unless I would stay here with him. He said he wanted me to be his girl.
You going outside, Tessie. Wait for me.
Gently, he pushed her aside, but she stayed where she was.
Johnny, he's too big for you. Don't fight him. Let's just go.
We'll go in a few minutes.
Fists tight, he started across the room toward Gerson. He had been so angry he hadn't thought about Gerson having a gun. But there it was, a rifle propped against a table. Gerson took one quick step and reached it. He brought it up before Johnny could move against him.
You just keep on coming, cowboy. I'll blow a hole in you as big as your hat. All I gotta do is pull this trigger. You on a dodge anyway. Likely they give me a reward.
Don't kill him. I'll do anything.
Kind of fancies you, don't she, cowboy? You know, maybe I ought to take her up on that. Maybe I ought to just let you ride away.
I wouldn't leave without her.
I know. That's why I gotta kill you. The minute I turn my back, you be here again, looking for a way to kill me.
She'll do you no good, Gerson. Sooner or later, she'll get away. She'll tell, and they'll come looking for you.
No, I'll take care of that in due time.
My partner's outside. Shoot me, and he won't let you get out of here alive.
A sick one? What can he do?
He can shoot.
You say he's outside?
Johnny nodded, hoping his eyes would not give away the lie. He had never felt less sure of himself.
All right. Well, you better go out there and talk to him. If he sees I got y'all covered with this rifle, he'll come along easy enough. You first, girl. Your knees on out that door.
White-faced, Tessie turned toward the opening. Johnny moved carefully along behind her. Tessie stepped through the door and down to the ground. Johnny paused in the doorway.
Tessie moved to one side.
What's going on?
But Johnny stood blocking the door. The girl was instantly out of Gerson's sight. Johnny looked off to his right.
He's got a gun in my back. If he shoots me, kill him. He can't get out of this house without you getting a clear shot at him.
Johnny waited a moment, trying to work up his courage.
If you shoot me now, Gerson, you're as good as dead. This shack of yours will be your coffin. Now, why don't you just put that gun down?
I don't think there's anyone out there.
Want to stick your head out and look?
Gerson swallowed. His hand was first tightening, then loosening on the rifle. Johnny's heart was high in his throat.
The gun, Gerson.
Sweat popped on Gerson's face. His lips quivered. Finally whipped, he lowered the barrel.
Tell your friend out there I'm putting it down.
Hand it to me.
Gerson did, and Johnny took it.
Tessie, come get this.
Tessie came quickly from around the corner. She took the rifle from Johnny's hand as he passed it through the door. Johnny turned again and looked at Gerson. The fear began draining out of him, and his anger came in a rush. Before Gerson knew what was happening, Johnny was plowing into him, fists swinging. Gerson sank to his knees, his arms raised defensively over his bleeding face. Reason slowly returned to Johnny, but not before he swung one more hard punch into Gerson's face.
Now, Gerson, don't you ever point a gun at a man again or take advantage of a girl. Tessie, the rifle.
Hesitantly, she handed it to him.
Johnny, you're not going to kill him.
I ought to. I would if he made a move. Get to your wagon now and let's be moving.
He stayed with the rifle on Gerson till he heard the wagon move. Then he backed out the door and swung into his saddle, the rifle still in his hands. He rode to the corral, opened the gates, and chased away a horse he found penned there. That would leave Gerson afoot. With the creek running, there would be no need for horses to come in for water where Gerson could make an easy catch. Johnny pulled in behind the wagon and trailed it at some distance. He rode slantways in the saddle, looking back at Gerson's house, the rifle in his hands. For all he knew, Gerson might have another rifle somewhere. Johnny didn't want to be caught with his back showing. He rode like that, watching behind him, till he passed over the hill and out of sight of the house. Only then did he relax a little and look ahead of him at the wagon. Tessie Barnett reined up and sat with her hands over her face. As Johnny rode up anxiously, she lowered her hands a little. They were shaking. Her face was milk white.
Tessie, what's the matter?
She motioned for him to sit on the wagon seat beside her. He tied the horse on behind, eased Gerson's rifle down in the wagon bed, and climbed up. To his surprise, she opened her arms and pulled herself tight against him, burying her face against his chest. Hesitantly, he placed his hands on her shoulders and found them trembling.
Tessie, it's all right now. It's done.
Johnny, I'm sorry to be like this. I don't know what you must think of me.
I don't think anything bad of you, Tessie. You know that. You had a couple of hard days.
I wish I weren't such a baby.
You're no baby. I don't expect any girl would have done better. Most of them not half as good.
I won't break down this way again, Johnny. From now on, I'll be strong.
The worst has already happened. Not likely anything as bad will ever happen to you again.
Somewhere, though, you're gonna have to leave me and be on your way, Johnny Fristo. It's going to be hard for me to say goodbye.
How come I had to be like this, Tessie? How come I didn't meet you a few days ago when I had nothing to run from? Nothing to be afraid of?
I don't know, Johnny. Maybe we just weren't meant to have any luck.
For a long moment, a rider sat outlined on the bald top of a rock-strewn hill to the west. Johnny Fristo felt a reflex of fear that stopped his breath and stiffened his hands on the leather lines. Then reason told him this couldn't be Haggard, and he eased. The rider wasn't tall. His shoulders were hunched a little, and his manner of riding showed he wasn't a young man. He came down through the big green clumps of Sacawista and reined toward the wagon, taking his time. He rode with the slack ease of a man who had done it all his life, and a long life at that.
Howdy. Y'all lost?
We're looking for a ranch house.
Mine's a little ways over the hill. Would it do?
I expect. We got a sick feller here.
The elderly rider eased in closer, stopping his sorrel horse beside the wagon and looking down at the feverish speck.
You sure do. You oughtn't be hauling him around.
It isn't because we want to.
Well, we'll take him on up to my house. Sarah'll be glad to see company, so she won't care whether they're sick or well, just so they stay a while.
Sarah?
My wife. She's the best in the country when it comes to taking care of the ailing.
We found a place with a woman.
You come a ways, I guess. Bet your young married folks heading west to find a home.
No, sir, we're not married. We just come across this girl a couple days ago down the river. She was needing help.
The old rider couldn't help hide his curiosity, but he didn't pry. He shoved his hand at Johnny.
My name's Dugan Whitaker.
Fristo. Johnny Fristo. And this here is Tessie. Back yonder, Speck.
Fristo? That's got a familiar ring to it. I used to cowboy with a feller by that name back yonder on the San Saba River. It's been 25 or 30 years ago. Baker, his first name was Baker Fristo.
My dad.
By George, I ought to guess when I looked at you. But it was so long ago the Twin Mountains was just a pair of anthills. You're him all over again. Only I'll bet you can't ride Bronx the way he could.
No, sir. I reckon he can still ride rings around me.
I expect you do well enough. Being Baker Fristo's son, you've had a good raising. Come on, let's go to the house.
He let the wagon have the dim trail, and he rode his horse alongside.
We got a settlement now, ways yonder over the hills on the upper reach of the Middle Concho. But Sarah, she don't take well to traveling anymore, so we don't often go, and we don't see many folks. Sarah knew your dad. She'll be real interested in seeing the kind of man Baker Fristo's son turned out to be.
Whitaker began talking to Tessie.
We have a daughter not much older than you. She up and married, though, and moved west. These ranches can get awful lonesome for a woman alone. Sarah's gonna be real tickled to see you.
Mr. Whitaker, we got a favor to ask. For Tessie, that is.
Johnny explained how he and Speck had come across the girl and her dying father. The old ranchman nodded in sympathy.
We didn't just want to leave her there. We've been looking for a ranch house, somebody to take her to San Angelo.
My place is the first one you found?
Not exactly. Came across one yesterday. A feller named Gerson.
You didn't leave her there with him?
Not long.
Pity this country is getting so all-fired civilized. 10 years ago, they'd have left the likes of Gerson dangling off some live oak tree. He's been awful careless where he puts his branding irons.
He got kind of careless yesterday.
Whitaker glanced again at the girl and read his own meaning. His mouth went grim.
There's other ways than hanging a man. One day I'll have a talk with some of the boys.
They came inside of a big growth of chinaberry trees, a pair of windmills, and a water-filled surface tank that had been hollowed out of the ground by horse, mule, and man sweat. Dugan Whitaker had a small rock house, built of material hauled down a wagon load at a time from the hills.
Sarah, we got company.
Johnny expected to see a woman walk out onto the porch, but none did. He thought he glimpsed a face inside, back in the windows. He couldn't be sure. He knew a moment of doubt. If he had seen a woman, there was something odd here. Whitaker swung down and wrapped one of his leather reins around a post to hold his horse. He turned toward the wagon.
Let you and me get a hold of your friend here and carry him into the house.
They lifted Speck carefully. Johnny expected to see the woman come out and hold the screen door open. She didn't. Tessie ran ahead and opened it.
Right on back this way. We'll put him in that lean-to.
Inside, Johnny caught a glimpse of a woman seated in a chair. Only a glimpse, but it was enough to anger him a little. What kind of hospitality was this, anyway? The least she could have done was come over and see what the trouble was. He helped Whitaker put Speck on the bed.
Sarah, we got a sick cowboy on her hands.
Johnny turned and saw her still seated, but the chair was close now. It was a chair with wheels.
What ails him, son? Don't worry. This chair doesn't bother me much anymore. Not like it seems to be bothering you.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I didn't go to stare at you.
I'll bet you're not a very good poker player. Your eyes give away what's in your head. What's the trouble with your friend?
Johnny told her. She touched her hand to Speck's head.
Got fever, all right. How's his breathing been?
Short, kinda. He's been in some pain.
I expect he's knocking at the door of pneumonia. But he may not have crossed over the line yet. Maybe we can hold him back. First thing, you and Dugan get the clothes off him. Young lady, you want help? You can reach up onto a top shelf in the kitchen and get me some whiskey. I'll show you where it's at.
She wheeled the chair out about as fast as Tessie could walk. After the men had removed Speck's clothing and covered him with a blanket, Sarah Whitaker came wheeling back. Tessie brought a steaming cup.
Now, young fella, I want you to raise up and drink this. Take it slow, but drink it all.
She took the cup from Tessie's hands and passed it over to Speck, keeping a hold on it so he couldn't spill it.
Drink it. That's more whiskey than anything else. It'll help boil the fever out of you. Now, girl, if you'll pull up the covers on him, we want him to have to sweat the fever out.
Soon, Speck was complaining about the heat, and perspiration was rolling from his face. When he made a weak move to push away the covers, Sarah Whittaker firmly pulled them back into place.
It's just something you'll have to go through. Later, you'll feel better for it.
After a while, Johnny walked out onto the shaded front porch. Dugan Whittaker came out after him.
I don't guess it's easy for Mrs. Whittaker, the way she has to get around.
Well, but she does all right. It was better when our daughter was still living here. She was a world of help. You can't keep a girl around forever, though. When they grow up, they got a right to have a life of their own. You gotta let the fledglings leave the nest.
I don't mean to ask questions, ain't none of my business, but how'd it happen? Mrs. Whittaker, I mean.
A runaway horse and a buckboard. Had a young horse, not broke long. He boogered at a jackrabbit and commenced to run. Flipped the buckboard over on Sarah out yonder a ways, where you see that white-faced bull grazing. She crawled all the way to the house for help. Last step she ever took was when she walked out to that buckboard. It's the last step she'll ever take.
Real bad luck.
Well, don't waste time feeling sorry for her. She doesn't. Everybody's got a cross of one kind or another to carry. Sarah took the one that was marked for her and made the best of what she had left. She said if it was the devil's work to cripple her, she wasn't going to give him the pleasure of seeing her miserable. I guess a strong spirit's worth more than strong legs. We all got something to carry. Some trouble that hangs over our heads. Even as young as you are, I expect life hadn't been all honey and sweet milk.
Mr. Whittaker, before you do anything more for me and Speck, I better tell you about us. You may not want to keep us around.
You fellas are in some kind of trouble, ain't you? I sensed it from the first.
Then why'd you bring us in?
Always did consider myself a pretty good judge of men. I had a feeling about you, even before I found out you was Baker Fristo's son. You couldn't have done anything very bad.
Johnny told him about their trouble on the Sonora-San Angelo Road and about Milam Haggard. Listening, Whittaker turned grave.
Boy, you know Haggard's reputation.
I'm afraid I do.
It's going to be several days before your partner's in shape to ride. You got that much time?
I don't know. Might have if the rain wiped out her tracks down the river. Haggard might be several days picking up the trail we left after we got away from Middle Concho.
Yeah, he might, and again, he might not. They say he's got a sixth sense about him. I didn't mean to talk like that. You know your trouble well enough without me harping on it.
I know the problem, all right. I just don't know the answer.
It seems to me it was your partner that got you into this scrape. You might be able to save yourself if you'd just go off and leave him here.
I wouldn't do that.
I didn't think you would. No son of Baker Fristo ever could.